that the CBS Free FM in New York is worried about our self-images. Because the last thing Rudy said to us, Rudy's the engineer in New York, last thing he said was, "You're hot."
I think he's just trying to cheer you up.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe he thought that we were having some self-esteem issues.
He's
"You're
right.
Hot," he says. Right when the, I guess it was coincidental completely with the mic going on.
It could be.
This this radio thing's new to me. This is Penn Jillette.
You forgot your own name.
I don't have that written down. Penn Jillette, and I'm sitting here with Michael Goudeau, whose name I do know.
Thank you.
And we're in Las Vegas, but talking to New York, Chicago.
Every place.
We're talking to Vegas.
We're talking to Vegas, too.
And Vegas is here. Vegas is on board. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Taylor.
They're just waking up now here in the Big Sin City. Big Sin City. Did you have a show last night?
No, I was off.
Yeah? I'm off all this week. I'm on this is what I sound like on vacation. On vacation, I come in and work at Free FM because it's free. And on vacation, you should be doing things
that are free.
So, no show.
Like,
what did you do over the weekend?
I took my kids to see Disney on Ice, actually.
Well,
it wasn't Disney on Ice. I'm sorry. It was.
You're thinking about the cryogenics.
Exactly, yeah. I'm obsessed with cryogenics.
Did they actually have a show called Disney on Ice?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, Stephen Banks. Stephen Banks, who now works at SpongeBob. He's the head writer there. He had a song. He had his own show called Home Entertainment Center. And one of the songs in that show was Disney on Ice.
Yeah.
And you couldn't say the name of it because that was the punchline. You know, because the whole setup was, you know, rumor goes, or so they say, Walt Disney was not buried in the usual way. Walt is dead. Yeah, that's a fact. But some people say that he's going to come back. Disney on Ice. And the fact that one of the most persistent urban myths, I mean, besides being in the backseat of a car with a guy with a hook outside, one of the most persistent urban myths is that Disney never got buried. He was put on ice.
Right.
And he's being, you know, frozen at Forest Lawn or something. And then to put out a show called Disney on Ice, it's one of those things like trying to make fun of Hogan's Heroes. All the comedy is already there. But now they've got Nemo on Ice.
Nemo on Ice, which is where you'd expect to find a fish, really.
So all it is, it's a fishmonger.
It's a fishmonger, yeah. You just go in and you get some
There's all these
chips.
Dead fish.
No, it's people dressed as Nemo skating.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, and your kids like this?
They did.
See, my daughter's 7 months. So
she might not like it.
She wouldn't care.
It's cold, so you know, it's on ice.
Uh-huh. Is it real ice? Is it not Teflon?
It's real ice.
In
Vegas? They're skating and, yeah.
Where do they have this? Over
beautiful.
The big arena?
The Orleans.
Oh, really?
The Orleans Arena, yes.
And what did they look like? How did they get fish to skate?
It's the ice
Tom
show
Robin.
Of Dr. Moreau. It's half man, half fish. Half woman, half fish. You know, there are people wearing fish around their middles, which is a little alarming because the big plastic eyes are in inappropriate spots on the women.
Where the breasts would be?
They are, yes.
So they have big googly
big
breasts?
Big googly fish eyes where their breasts are supposed to be.
But they're figure skaters, so they're not going to have huge breasts.
And that's, you know, I find that bothersome because if you get gold, you get to do, you know, your own show and stuff like that. But if you're silver at the Olympics, you're Nemo. You're Bert in Sesame Street on Ice if you don't get the gold.
And I didn't see I didn't see Finding Nemo. Even though Albert Brooks is in it, and I love Albert Brooks. Mm-hmm. But is it the same plot when it's on ice?
Yes, it is exactly the same plot.
Exactly.
They just recreate the movie on ice.
And they don't. There's no breaking of the fourth wall whatsoever. None of the characters say, "Hey, we're fish." On ice or anything?
No, but the people inside the suits do wave at you during the show. So, you know, Nemo's looking for Dad, and the person sitting inside of Nemo waves on occasion.
And they use the voice of Albert Brooks?
Yes, they did.
They
just used the real voices, which was a good choice in my
just opinion. Right from the movie.
Yeah.
Right from the soundtrack.
And, you know, the other odd thing is that the people inside the costumes, even though it's not their face as Nemo, they're lip syncing. So there's a man with orange makeup on to be Nemo's fin, but the fin is talking as well as...
Oh, the mouth. It's like, it's that weird thing. It's everything's gone way postmodern because, you know, the movie Avenue Q,
right,
which is the funniest show in
the
Las
movie,
Vegas.
The show.
Yeah, the show. The funniest show in Las Vegas. Yeah, it's a play. It's a show here. I saw it in New York. But here now it's the funniest. And I want to do a billboard that said funnier than the funniest show. Because today we're not funnier than Avenue Q. Put a bullet in my head. It's a fine, it's a fine show. Nothing wrong with it. But funniest show in Vegas? No. And that's the thing. You have people beside the puppet that you can see. It's not ventriloquism.
Right.
You know, it's not like they're carrying. It's supposedly invisible people carrying. Have you seen Avenue Q?
I have not, yeah.
They carry around puppets, and they're just carrying them around. It's right. Like, you know, it's like watching Sesame Street without any of the things
without
in the way.
Without the tables.
No tables, nothing. Oh, okay. They just walk around, and they sing the songs and everything, and the spotlight kind of goes. It's not black art. It's not like they're wearing
ninja
suits.
They're not trying to hide.
No.
They're not trying to hide.
It's just America's gotten so hip.
The
irony has been taken to such a degree that Nemo can have a head sticking out his fin, and the Avenue Q people can be over to one side. It's insane. And speaking of America being cool.
America's very cool for you, isn't it, Mr. Lousy Cover? This will never work is what you said, I believe.
I was skeptical.
Where were you? Number 9? Are you number 9 on Amazon? It's not even out yet, is it?
Yeah, the movie The Aristocrats.
Is that what we're talking about, The Aristocrats?
Yes, I was going to talk about Miss America when I said America, but you jumped right to this. That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm not embarrassed. The Aristocrats is now, as we speak, as we're sitting here, is number 9. Turn me on, dead man. Number 9, number 9, on Amazon. We're the number 9 selling DVD in Amazon.
So apparently your idea of a good DVD cover is as wrong as everything else.
Or maybe the cover doesn't matter when you've got that kind of funny. When you've got that kind of pure funny. The funny that jumps out of the computer screen. There's so much funny that you even get over the dog could not kill the funny. And we were number 7 for, you know, over the weekend. I guess we've dropped a little bit.
Everybody had to go to work, you know.
They couldn't just sit home and click the... And, of course, that doesn't even include the 500 copies that I bought and gave away on the show.
That could be why we're number 7. That was the hour.
But the Aristocrats movie by Paul Provenza and Penn Jillette, starring everybody in the world, is on Amazon at number 9, which means when it comes out, what if we hit number 1? I mean, most things I've done artistically, so to speak, most things I've done, I don't think I've ever gotten out of the thousands on Amazon. Because, you know, you can be like 1,109 on Amazon and be doing very well.
Sure.
You know? You don't have to be Coca-Cola in the supermarket. You can be olives and you can do okay, you know? You don't have to be potato chips.
Sure.
But this time, with this cover of which I did not approve, rocketing up the charts.
Perhaps it's the sticker promotion that's driving it.
I have a top 10 hit.
You do.
I have a top 10 hit. I got a good beat. You can dance to it. I produced and created something that is the top 10. And this is the top 10 in 2006 Amazon. This isn't like Amazon 95 when, you know, one ZZ Top record was all they were offering. No, they didn't even offer records. It was all books, right?
Probably, yeah.
And you know something else?
No. Nope.
The Bible is not in the top 10 in Amazon. You know, supposedly the best-selling book of all time.
I think it's a longevity thing.
Yeah, okay. So it's not just 1 week.
It's been number 6,000 for, you know, the 2,000 times 50.
So if we can keep the Aristocrats in the top 10 for like 2,000 years, the coin will roll in.
I think it will.
But, I mean, Harry Potter creams the Bible, destroys the Bible.
It's a better story. I have to say I found the lead character a little more friendly. I don't know. Identified a little more.
Very little. You know all this stuff because you're kids. Does Harry Potter smote? Do a lot of smoting?
He does some smoting. He does.
He does some smoting, doesn't he?
I don't think they specifically call it smoting, but he does some smoting.
But he's more pleasant. He's cuter.
He's cute.
You don't see 12-year-old girls swooning over God, do you? Going, ooh, he's so cute.
No, Harry Potter has that swimmer's body as well.
Well, we're separating Yetwah from Jesus.
Yes, okay.
Jehovah.
Okay.
Allah.
You're just going to go through all the names?
All the Zeus. Zeus. Charlie Manson. All the names of the deities of our world. And Miss America. See, over the weekend, my wife, for some inexplicable reason, watched a little bit of the Miss America
pageant. My mom came in down to watch it on TV with my wife. They like to heckle every year. That's
is your mom and your wife mean to the women?
Yes,
on there?
Yes, I have to confess they are. They asked me not to say anything embarrassing about them today, but clearly they are heckling the Miss America pageant.
What parts did they heckle? They heckled their bodies?
I wasn't there. I was off working, so I missed the heckling. But
missed the heckling?
I would assume it was the outfits mostly.
Oh, they just say that's a bad outfit?
Why are you wearing that is, I guess, probably the most repeated phrase.
The only thing my wife said, mean-spirited, besides one of them having a horse face, the only thing, which I don't think is particularly mean-spirited, that's just reporting.
Right.
She doesn't seem to like when the hems are even all the way around. Makes it look like a prom dress. That's what she said.
Okay.
She wants some more Courtney Love. Well, Courtney Love.
More ragged.
What year was Courtney Love Miss America?
Yeah, it was...
Miss Crystal Man.
92.
The Miss America, and I didn't see this, and I would have dug seen it. There was a big
fuss.
Stink fuss. Craziness over Miss America, Miss Nevada. Miss Nevada.
Crystal
about,
Wasik, yeah.
Yeah. What's your name?
Crystal Wasik.
Wasik is the name?
Wasik, W-I-S-I-K.
Yeah, Wasik. Crystal. She talked about Yucca Mountain. You know?
Right.
Now, it's not like there's going to be a big fuss over Miss America, because Miss America started out primetime network television, when everybody watched primetime network television from Atlantic City, and now it's the country music channel from Vegas. So they've taken, you know, the mighty have fallen, you know, and it's not Burt Parks anymore, because he's dead.
Yeah,
maybe. He's a big animal rights guy.
He doesn't call anymore.
Nope. So there's a guy from Desperate Housewives who's hosting it. And I don't think it gets huge ratings now. But the cool thing is, the thing that they bust people on, right, is they always make fun of Miss America's for saying stupid stuff. Like, I want to, you know, fight for world peace.
World peace, yeah. That's standard.
That's the standard joke. And they asked Miss America about Yucca Mountain.
A hard-hitting question.
Really was, yeah.
By comparison to,
sure,
I support world
for
peace.
Sure, you know, do you like puppies? You know, that's that's the question the one before her got. You know, do you like, you'd like to call them Toll House cookies or chocolate chip cookies, you know? And then they come with a real question about using Yucca Mountain for nuclear waste disposal.
Right.
Which is a big issue here in Nevada. I was here in Nevada, because that's where I live. But I was at a Starbucks, at a Buc-ee's.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was at the terrorist Starbucks, you know, the one where they planned 9/11, or some of them did, which they have, you know, if you talk to the people that have worked there a while, they'll point to the table and say, that's where we saw them planning 9/11. And I went to the terrorist Starbucks. I was there.
Right.
And it's on the way to my doctor. And I was stopping to get more, you know, more coffee.
Sure. Doctors checking your blood pressure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Someone came over to me, like, you know, unsolicited, mm-hmm, to tell me to fight against the nuclear dump at Yucca Mountain. And so they asked Miss America about this, Crystal.
Right.
Crystal Wozniak.
Mm-hmm.
And Wasik. And she said that it had to go somewhere, and that this was the best designed or the safest place in the country.
Yeah.
And they said, what if it kills people? And she said, well, I suppose someone has to take one for the team.
We just have to take one for the team.
We have to take one for the team. The greatest answer ever given on television to any question, because television does this thing, and it makes me crazy, where that's what does it.
That's the point. I didn't know it was TV that was making you crazy.
This is the
thing. I thought it was the nuclear waste.
It's not even TV in general. It's a specific thing that happens on TV, where they compare as though there were no negatives. Like, we can't go nuclear because that's a dangerous way to have power, but they don't point out that having coal power is also dangerous.
Right.
That it messes up the atmosphere, and that we have miners trapped all the time, although Sylvia Brown doesn't know it, even after it happens.
Yeah. That's a funny story, now that you're on that.
Yeah, you want to go to that?
Yeah, why not?
This is a few days ago. Yeah, Sylvia Brown.
She was on, what show?
Sylvia Brown, for those who don't know, claims to be psychic. And so she was on Larry King, which she always is, because Larry is smart enough to not believe in any of this, but I think he's cynical enough that he'll just put anybody on that has a wacky story. And she was on making all these claims, and Amazing Randy, you know, my hero, most important person to me outside of my family in my life, Amazing Randy at randy.org,
R-A-N-D-I.org,
Randy said, you know, well, we'll give you $1 million because we have it in escrow if you can do one of the things you claim to do. And she just Didn't answer. I guess she said...
She said, yes, absolutely,
I'll
do it.
She said, yes, absolutely, I'll do it.
There's a countdown on the website for how many days it's been since she said she would do it.
Go to the website, randi.org, and see the countdown of Sylvia Brown. But then, after it was announced that the miners were...
Well, you know, we had that that terrible the news story.
After it was announced that they were all dead,
they were all alive.
No, it was announced they were all alive.
It was announced they were all alive. Sylvia said, I knew that. They were all fine. I just knew that. And then a couple of minutes later, she was live on George Noory's radio show, Coast to Coast.
Yep.
And so when they came back from the commercial and said, oh, we were wrong, they were all dead, she said, yeah, I knew they were all dead. So she said both, apparently. Some version of that.
It's so much easier to be psychic after the fact.
Yeah, it's good. I don't know what Sylvia was doing 9:10 exactly.
You know, this is the thing, you know, that Richard Dawkins talks about a lot. You know, if you go on TV, you know, and you say there is no God, or you in anger or disgust, you're going to get X number of letters. I think they probably know the number, mm-hmm. like 1,800 letters you're going to get, mostly written in crayon.
Right.
That say, don't say that or I won't buy your Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
Any letter that you get in crayon that says I'm not buying a Lexus, you could just throw it out. But they do this whole campaign, and then networks get terrified that they're losing the Christian thing. And yet someone like Sylvia Brown can go on Larry King and just insult in every way possible all the scientists who have lived, you know? There's a horrible, deep insulting of scientific
sure.
method and of logic, and this goes up there, and I don't think that the people who respect science and respect technology and respect the truth write the letters to Larry King and say, if you keep having people like this
go.
On...
Let's you know, start that campaign.
Yeah,
what do you say?
Just write in. And you don't have to be mean or over the top like I would be.
Say, hey, Sylvia Brown is not and she's following physics as we know them.
And this is the other thing that really bugs
she's
me.
She's violating the law.
The other thing that really bugs me is that people think that being a skeptic is negative or being an atheist is negative. Oh, they're naysayers. They're negative. And the fact is that it's just that spin of negative. Because the truth of the matter is all that is pro-science. You know, it's pro-reality, pro-science. What it is, being a skeptic, is a pat on the back to Copernicus and Newton
sure.
and Einstein.
Common sense.
And common sense, yeah. But that is considered to be negative and sour. So I just wish, you know, someone just wrote into us and said they read somewhere, which is good enough for me, having talked about truth and checking all your facts, read somewhere is fine with me, that atheism is the third largest religion
in
this country.
They said a Yahoo search for religion turned up atheism as number three.
Yeah, and that's pretty good. Of course, it's a distant third. But I think it's like USA Today said a while ago that it was in like 20%, which is huge. Which means if you just write a letter or so, they'll start kowtowing to us. So Miss America says, take one for the team.
Right.
About Yucca Mountain. And which I think... is the way you have to look at these things. You know,
yeah,
you have to make decisions
it's
like a grown-up.
Got to be put somewhere.
It's got to be put somewhere, and there's certain dangers, and you weigh them.
I'd rather it was somewhere else, but if it's here, then it's
you're
here.
You're one of those that's... not in my backyard?
No, not. I'm just saying that it has to be in someone's backyard. I'd prefer it was somewhere else's backyard, but it might be mine.
I'd like to have it here.
Maybe the fish will get really big.
Maybe if you're gonna have Godzilla somewhere in the world attacking people, wouldn't you want it to be?
Yeah,
in your
do you
want to
read about Godzilla,
or
do you
want to see
Godzilla? Exactly.
You want to read about Godzilla?
That's what it comes down to.
So she says this actually has guts, and actually is in my mind correct, saying that we don't have a choice where everybody's happy. So maybe there's a choice where you take a little danger. It is, you know, it is live free or die. It's home of the free, you know, home of the brave. And we should take chances. She makes this strong, groovy statement, and they rip her to pieces. So now, you know, you're saying, which way do you want it? Do you want Miss Americas that are vapid, insipid, and empty? Or do you want a gutsy Miss America, like we had, you know, Miss Nevada, who didn't even make the final 10? But Miss Nevada came out and took a stand on something. She said something that not everyone agrees. We're proud of Miss Nevada, and she should be. And she's probably too groovy, too cool to have run for Miss America. And I'll say on behalf of her, because as Miss America, she can't say this. She didn't want their stinking prize anyway. She didn't want to be Miss America.
Let's send her a
she's
DVD.
She's too cool. Let's send her a DVD. This is Ben Gillette and Michael Godeau in Las Vegas, where we're taking one for the team.
Woo-hoo!
That's what we're doing. Hello, New York. We'll be back. We'll Hi! This is Penn Jillette here with Michael Goudeau. And that theme song is the Mike Jones Big Band.
Woo-hoo.
Ripping it up with me on bass. I can always throw that in. Let's take a phone call at 866-313-FREE. 866-313-FREE. 3733, that is.
Well, we'll get him on here eventually.
We got Nick on line 5, or we just got this echo that we could do. You there?
Hello?
Hey, man. How you doing, boss? Is this Nick?
I can hardly hear you guys.
Sorry about that, Nick.
No, first off, I wanted to thank you very much for actually, you and Michael, for tackling real subjects on the radio.
Well, thanks.
It's kind of hard to hear people that will actually tackle real subjects.
We see ourselves as the Miss Nevada of radio.
Also, I wanted to thank you personally, Penn, for I picked up one of your books, How to Play with Your Food.
Uh-huh.
And one of the first chapters in there was with the creamer and the eye thing with the fork. Oh,
one of the greatest tricks ever. Did you do it?
Yeah, I did it. I did it for my kids in a diner, and I realized that a little kid across the way was watching me do it too, and started screaming and making a whole big stink. And her mother came over and started screaming at me for scaring her child.
That's a very good day, isn't it?
But my kids loved it. They thought it was great. I even practiced in the bathroom in the tub, you know, trying to make sure that I cupped it just right and everything.
Oh, that's great. Well, for those of you who don't know, we don't expect you don't have to have read all the books to come on to listen to the radio show. There's a trick by Mac King,
sure,
who does a show over at Harris here in Vegas. It's a fabulous trick for sticking a fork in your eye, and I have to do. Our lawyer told us I need all these disclaimers, and if you have any doubt about the ability to handle a fork near your eye, don't try this. But the trick that Nick's talking about is you pick up one of those creamers, those mm-hmm.
half
and half little white creamers they have. Sometimes it's also non-dairy, certain diners,
yes.
And you turn it upside down so that the paper part, the part you rip off, the lid is against the table. Then you cup your hand around it. You know?
You're going to teach this on the air. That's
I'm going to
nice.
Teach on the air. So this is what's hidden there. And then you start monkeying with your eye. You pick up a fork, and you start monkeying with your eye. You just start kind of putting the fork near your eye. You don't say anything like, ooh, want to see a cool trick. Just put the fork up near your eye. And then people start going, ooh, ooh, Nick's got a fork near his eye. Fun's a-coming. And then when everybody's looking at you, you bring your hand that has, and it's not like you're palming it. This is not a hard move. David Blaine could do this move.
Okay.
It's not a difficult move. You're holding it in your hand, and then you just bring up the creamer in your hand to your eye, looking through it as though it were a telescope. So now sticking out is the lid, and then you do three things simultaneously. You stick the fork into the top of the creamer. You squeeze your hand, and you scream like a Mother Hubbard. You just scream all at once, and that shoots white gunk out of your eye. Just shoots it out of the
appears.
Hand. Appears. Appears to shoot white gunk out of your eye. And it is such a wonderful trick. Tell us again what happened. Your kids loved it, right?
Oh, my kids loved it because I squeezed the creamer so hard that it shot all over them.
Oh, yeah.
All over the table. And then as I bent down towards the table and dropped the creamer between my legs,
oh.
And I came back up and started screaming and everything, and the kids were rolling. They thought it was the greatest thing.
So you're a pro,
man.
Wow. You're a pro.
Well,
nicely done.
That a little bit. How to cut my
hand
over it. Just
how old are your kids?
4 and 2.
Oh, wow. You have they're just sitting there going, Dad is so cool. I think you get, if we were having a contest for Best Dad Award, you just won it. You know, they're going to grow up. You know that story is going to be told forever.
Remember when Dad poked his eye with a fork?
Yeah.
That's
great. Strange names for my children, too. So
what are your kids' names?
My son's name is Tetsuo.
Tetsuo?
T-E-T-S-U-O.
Where'd you get that?
It's actually Japanese. I got it out. It's like the childlike god of revenge or something like that. And the reason why it started like that is my grandfather pulled me aside in the Ben Franklin Institute and said, I hope you have kids just like you. And I hope that you're cursed.
And what about the girl?
My daughter's name is Pandora.
Pandora.
Nice.
Oh, man, you just got myths going, don't you?
You are the man.
Well, and tell us again,
Nick.
Tell us, what's that? What did you say?
We were talking over you, sorry.
The first female in Greek mythology.
Right, we know that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
but I mean, maybe not everybody did, so that's cool. And I want to hear, because this is the part that I revel in, what did the mother of the child who was upset say to you? Just relive that for a moment.
Well, at first she exclaimed that, how can I do that in front of small children? That's more an adult joke, and that, you know, you can really damage your children for life. And I exclaimed to her that I wasn't, you know, I thought no other children were watching, you know, my children are fully capable of handling it, you know, with half the cartoons that they watch anyway.
Also, you told her you didn't think any stupid children were watching. Was that your argument, but said more politely, yeah.
Yeah, I can't go and claim that your children are ignorant or anything.
Of course you
like
can.
That.
No, that would be wrong.
Yeah, I think if
true, but wrong.
If a kid can watch a rabbit get an anvil over its head, you know, they can
you
a little fake magic trick, you know, some kind of illusion.
Now, just to make this clear, you do not drop anvils on rabbits
for the amusement
of your kids. Good,
no.
Good. Well, that's great, Nick. You're the greatest guy in the world. Thanks, boss.
No, I want to thank you very much. I really appreciate you guys.
Oh, thanks so much, man. Thank you.
Hey, we have a Gmail from Paul Casby who says 223 weeks since Sylvia was invited to take the $1 million
challenge. 223 weeks. That's almost a year.
We should figure out what the interest would be.
223 weeks.
Almost a year, man.
Almost a year.
Did you do that math in your head?
Yes, I did. Yes,
wow.
I did. 223 weeks. That's a lot. And she still has not come through and said to Randy, give me the $1 million. And there's no out on this. You can't say, well, I don't want $1 million. Because if you don't, you can give it to charity. Sylvia Brown doesn't think there's any charity that's better than
to an orphanage.
Give it to anybody. You don't have to tell her. That's the best thing about having a lot of money. You do with it whatever you want. So, Sylvia, you'd get the $1 million, but, you know.
Pass it right on.
The possibility is she can't do anything.
You think? You think that's why she hasn't come down
that
to do it?
That might be it.
She's very busy.
Very busy.
She's very busy.
Bill Gates is not too busy to get $1 million for nothing.
For a day,
maybe. If you said to Bill Gates, you know, we don't really believe you can tap a pencil four times on the table, and we'll give you $1 million if you can, Bill Gates would make time.
Well, yeah, you know, if there were $1 million prize for juggling.
Well, you'd
you
be
know,
there.
I'd be there as fast, you know, first in line. Yeah, I'll use your oranges if you want.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not that.
Sure. But also, if there are $1 million prize for juggling, people who had never juggled before would learn it in time to get the prize.
Yeah, well, you learn it on the flight down. It wouldn't take long.
It doesn't. You just, you know, you can go into the bathroom in the cabin.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? And if you're really cool, if they start doing parabolas, you could pull zero G's. And do some really cool juggling.
I don't know. I haven't tried that. Did you try to juggle?
I did not try to juggle. When I was in the Vomit Comet, which is the astronaut training thing, we go weightless.
Sure.
And I was weightless for 35 seconds at
a
time.
Right. So 747, they've pulled out all the seats and they fly up and down so that you're weightless.
And I believe what we were doing was illegal. Most of the time.
Every day on this show, we reveal something else illegal that you have done.
And yeah. I was with Billy Gibbons. If you're
going
to be weightless, you might as well be with Billy Gibbons. And we both had our little things. Billy wanted to play guitar. He brought a guitar and an amp.
There's a surprise.
And when he was weightless, he played the guitar and amp. It was this really beautiful old Les Paul that now was worth even more money. He was going to sell it on eBay or something for charity, which is what Sylvia Brown could do if she really had psychic powers. And he played the guitar a little bit. And you remember the movie Barbarella?
Yeah.
Where
Jane Fonda, sure.
Jane Fonda does a striptease in space. Barbarella.
Sure.
Psychedelic.
Yeah, the opening sequence, yeah.
Kind of like a conca shell of love. That's the Barbarella thing. In my voice. That's
if you were not arrested for flying, you should be arrested for singing.
So, it's a great song. And we had two astronauts with us that had video cameras.
Uh-huh.
So I decided that I would see what a striptease in space really looked like. So I brought my hair down, untied it, which I fancifully thought looked like Jane Fonda's. And then I sang for the astronauts, Barbarella, Psychedella, and I stripped completely naked. So I was naked with my hair down singing Barbarella in space, and then I threw up. I wasn't actually in space. I was floating weightless as though in space.
Yeah.
And when you do parabolas, you alternate between weightless and 2Gs.
Right.
So the 2Gs is bad. And the most important thing you're supposed to do is stay very still during the 2Gs.
Mm-hmm.
But when I stripped and took my belt off and swung it around like I would fancy Barbarella would do if she was wearing a belt like mine, which she never did, even when she was Hannah with Jane, I banged the belt buckle against the floor, and the silver dollar that my father gave me, you know,
right,
came out of the belt buckle and went off into space. So I went chasing it. I went chasing because for some reason I couldn't keep clear in my – well, the reason is stupidity. I couldn't keep clear in my head that the silver dollar was safe. So I went chasing it against the directions of the astronauts while weightless, while naked, with my hair down. And as I reached the silver dollar, it went to 2G's. And I slammed down on the floor of this cargo plane, weighing, you know, 490 pounds, maybe 500.
Twice your weight.
Twice my weight, 520 pounds.
That's an easy way to say that.
Yeah. And it hit me at 2G's with the in my head and naked. And then I went right again, 35 seconds later, I went to 0 G's and came back up and started floating in the air and vomited. And the vomit stays in front of you, like this little cloud of vomit. And then my hair went into the vomit. And the astronaut was killing himself laughing and holding me by the hair and taking shots of me naked, vomiting into my
and
hair
floating.
In zero G while floating and still going, Barbarella, psychedella, kind of like a conch shell of love. So that was my story of being weightless. I don't even know how we got into that. We'll figure out during the break how we get into that, and then we'll get back into something interesting like Sylvia Brown and psychics. Right after this, Penn Jillette, Barbarella's. Oh, gee, now that's going to mess me up. Two Charles Ives for me. Two Charles Ives. If I had one wish, if I had one wish in the world, it would be that the Nick's, the people at the diner with Nick, the mother and the daughter who saw him stick his fork in the eye and were traumatized, I wish that daughter would be listening right now to the show and have forever in her mind the image of me naked and weightless singing Barbarella and vomiting into my hair.
Scarier than the creamer drink?
To some.
You know, is that video available? I mean,
I have the video.
That climbed to the top of the charts in Amazon in what? Minutes.
Minutes.
You should put it out.
I have all of it. I have all of it right on my computer right here, so I could show it to you, of me naked vomiting into my hair.
You know, I was sitting in the airport coffee shop while you did this.
I know you were.
With Provenza.
See, you're so happy. You carry on about how great it is to be the second banana, and you don't have to worry about the reviews and all that stuff. And Lance has to do all the work.
Sure.
You just go out and juggle. But then when it comes when it goes down to the vomit comet, they say, oh, we have room for Billy Gibbons. We have room for Penn Jillette. Michael Gooda?
Good.
He says a cheese for the last name.
Provenza and I had
the two men with cheese names.
Yep.
Provenza sounds like a cheese. So does Goudel. The two cheese men stay on the grill. What'd you have for breakfast?
Well, I don't know. Cheese.
What a great story. What a great story. As opposed to sitting with ZZ Top.
Yeah. I got to fly there with you and back with you, smelling like vomit. So
yeah, I did. Being weightless is the coolest thing in the world. It's the greatest.
Shut up.
And the cool thing was, there were all these jet pilot medics who had never been weightless before who were there with us to do the test. Because the way they got us to be able to do this with the FAA, the way they scammed it, was they put on the manifest that Billy Gibbons and I were aeronautics advisors. and then they had the medic team. And the medic team, they were women, two of them, and they were really very, very butch and officious.
Professional.
Saying, you know, when we're in, they didn't sound like this, but this was the idea. You know, when we get there and we get weightless, if you have any trouble, come to us because we have, we've ridden the Blue Angels. We know all about this.
We're
can pull
the physiologist. We can save you.
We can handle all this. And all they did the whole time, from the very first parabola, they were vomiting and they couldn't get out of their seats. And I said, well, the difference is, you see, you may have flown with the Blue Angels, but you've never played Cleveland. And Billy Gibbons and I both have. And we followed all the directions. And we did, you know, we were promised 12 parabolas, which means 6 minutes of weightless and 6 minutes of 2Gs. And we actually got like 28 of them because the pilot was like into it. And I didn't vomit until like 27. I mean, and that was only because of chasing the silver dollar of my father's and not following directions. But, man, you know, when you're weightless, there is a euphoria that comes over you that all is wonderful with the world. And
as
then
the calcium leaches out of your bones.
Well, that doesn't happen that fast.
And maybe then, that's what causes the euphoria.
But it's this wonderful feeling of no problems. Because, you know, I haven't weighed less than 200 pounds since I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so there's this feeling of being weightless and wonderful and free FM. That's what you're feeling. You're feeling,
feeling free FM.
With vomit in your hair and naked and singing Barbarella. And then you hit 2 G's. You know, like all of a sudden you live on Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Pluto's smaller.
That's a bad choice.
Bad example. Neptune. Is there any planet that's twice as big as Earth? No. They go, planets are all over the place. You can't use planets metaphorically.
They're tiny or they're big.
Tiny or they're big. No, do you, like twice the size of Earth. How's that?
Okay.
It's like you're there. And a place twice the size of Earth is such a bummer place to be because you can't move and it's hard to breathe. And it's not like any sort of oppression you felt before, you know. Of course, I've never lived in the Bible Belt, but it's a different, it's a bone deep, it's a gravity oppression.
Every cell is heavier.
And it just bums you like you can't believe. And you just become, you know, you become manic depressive, you know. All of a sudden,
you're on
like
the roller coaster.
You're like a soap star, you know. It's just you go from like this total euphoria. It's the way Courtney Love lives her life, you know. This total euphoria and then bring down, you know. Boom! And it hits so hard and it's so bad. And then the last bring down, when you have vomit in your hair and you're naked and the astronauts are laughing at you, it's very, very depressing. Horribly depressing. But it's such a kick when you're weightless. So that's what you have to learn about life, is it worth the downs to get the ups? And that's why, you know, people consider meth.
Are you trying to get this, connect this in some way?
I don't even know where we started with this.
I don't have any idea.
Really hard to. But, you know, someday we'll have a contest on this show for, like, the best person
track
who calls
the,
in.
Track the story.
To 866-313-FREE. And the best person who calls in, I'll invite them over to see the video of me vomiting into my hair naked while weightless. Now, this is a prize you might not want to win. You know, it'll be a very special kind of person that'll go, honey, I get a call in 1,000 times because Penn's going to show video of himself naked vomiting into his hair.
You should give it to caller number one. Save that guy some time because he's going to get all 1,000 times himself.
One guy wants to see that?
You asked me.
You wanted to see it.
I did.
You wanted to see it.
I would like to see it.
And you've seen me naked. Have you seen me vomit? You haven't seen me?
No, I don't believe so. No.
You've seen me with my hair down.
I've seen you with your hair down.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen me singing Barbarella?
I don't need any help.
All you're really going for is the vomit then, aren't you?
Yep, that's it.
And the weightless. My hair looked great. My hair looked so much better than...
It's like the static thing when you're holding onto the Van de Graaff generator, your hair's flying.
No, it's nothing like that. It's totally free. The hair's totally free.
All right.
Everything becomes 1968. Totally free. And you know, Jane Fonda is on a glass table.
Yeah, she's not weightless.
I'm not going to make a Danny Thomas joke, but she's on a glass table, and she's rolling around pretending to be weightless. So her hair doesn't have that fabulous bounce that mine
has. Like yours.
Not like mine. And she, I don't know how far she strips down. I don't think she doesn't go full naked because it's Barbarella. So she probably goes to R. You know,
maybe.
So she would go topless. Me, I go the extra mile. I went full naked, surrounded by astronauts. And astronauts who were not encouraging me, I might add. Astronauts are not, the ones that I've met are not particularly comfortable with naked men. I mean, these are heroes that are willing to die for anything, but that makes them a little uncomfortable. And they're all little, you know. Astronauts are tiny people.
Well, they should be. They have to fly up in a rocket.
Sure. Why, you know, and it costs like $10,000 a pound to put stuff into space, so why put me into space? But they put me on the Vomit Comet, and it was just terrific. Other people were trying to run experiments, you know, like how peas germinate. That's what they want to do. If I were going to be weightless, I would go up and I would just sing Barbarella over and over again.
Well, that's probably why NASA hasn't called.
NASA did call.
And what did they say? Stay away from us.
Ed Lu. Who was an astronaut.
Well, that's right. That's right. I heard this.
Ed Lu, he was on the shuttle. And when you're on the shuttle for a long time, they'll do things. And I'm not allowed to publicize this. So I can't say, like, I'm a big deal. I'm not allowed to talk about this, maybe. But anyway, NASA called me.
National Security.
I think I signed something that said I wouldn't talk about this. Maybe I did. But it's all gone by now, so it's okay. And also, what are the chances that NASA is listening to this broadcast, right? Very slim.
Very slim.
They're not big podcasting guys. You know, they're not going to be on penradio.com. But they called me up and said that Ed Lu, who was an astronaut, liked Penn and Teller. Mm-hmm. And would I call him in space? So I sat on the phone. It was the wackiest thing in the world. And I called this number they gave me.
Right.
And said, hi, I'm Penn Jillette. And they said, you know, he's coming in now. And all of a sudden, I was talking to Ed Lu on the shuttle.
Was it like the, one of the wake-up call things, or is it?
Yeah, kind of.
Cool.
And I got to be the guy that did, you know, good morning, Vietnam! I got to be that, and it was really cool. I talked to him in space for like 6 or 7 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, for a really long time. And he talked about trying to learn to play Begin the Begin on a electric keyboard he had up there with himself bungee cord to the floor there. And also, I wanted to find out if you could really see, you know, the Luxor here in Las Vegas.
Sure.
Has the light that comes off the top. I wanted to see if you could really see that from space.
Uh-huh.
And he said he'd fly over and check, and he did. Because now, now they have emails. You can get emails from space. But Ed Lu is going to be in Vegas this week.
Really?
Because it's it's the amazing
meeting. Amazing
week. Randy is having this big meeting, and everybody is going to be here. I mean,
26th to the 29th, I believe, of this month.
Yeah, it's fabulous thing. I think it's probably sold out, so forget about it. You can't go, ha ha. And one of the things they auctioned off was a tour of Teller's house, which I think you had to pay to not go, you know. But there was a big tour of Teller's house. And Teller's doing a whole production. You know, we auctioned off a tour of my house, and I just kind of showed up.
Right.
But Teller's got, like, dancing bears and stuff. He's got the whole thing laid out.
He's a professional.
He's a very, very big
professional. But he's making pancakes.
Yeah, well, you can't win them all. But he's got a cool look at his house. But also, Christopher Hitchens is going to be here. Lawrence O'Donnell, who I've talked about, mm-hmm. who writes on the West Wing.
And Randy, of course.
Of course, Randy. Of course, Randy. And a lot of good talks about skepticism, which is really pro-science. And they'll probably announce Sylvia Brown not having picked up the challenge.
You know, when someone did the math for you,
oh,
223 weeks?
As I said, 223 weeks is almost a year.
Almost 5 years.
Almost five years.
Has corrected your math.
My arithmetic. Almost 5 years.
Arithmetic.
I'm being very careful today because Chip Denman is in town for and
Chip's
his wife,
in the other room
and his wife Grace, and they're in the other room, and they are the founders of the National National Capital Area Skeptics or something, NCAS, which is if you're listening on this on WJFK, if you're in the Baltimore, Washington area and you're into the skepticism thing, look up NCAS, because they used to be the big cheeses. I think they turned it over to someone else. You know, they didn't. You know, it's not like George Washington.
Sure, cheese is a negative thing when you're sitting in a diner, but it's a positive thing when you're big.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big cheese, and he was. They're very careful, and he's very precise, and he knows everything. He's one of my friends. That's
statistician, right?
Isn't he's a statistician.
Teaches?
So when I say something like 234 weeks, that's almost a year.
Yeah.
He kind of somewhere hopes in his heart that I'm kidding, but he still cringes. Every time I see it. So I'm trying to correct mathematics to arithmetic just to curry favor. Because I'm going to walk out of this room.
He's going to be
saying,
there.
How'd you like the show, Chip? Oh, you didn't know how
math.
Many weeks
you
was.
You said math instead
said
of arithmetic.
Math arithmetic.
No, that was Goudeau.
I did like the part about you vomiting into your hair naked. But if you are a skeptic, and you certainly should be, and if you aren't a skeptic, why aren't you? You should go to NCAS. NCAS, I think it is. There's this on the web, National Capital Area Skeptics. Do a search for that. You'll find it. Join. They just had a big intelligent design there guy giving a speech. You know, against intelligent design, of course, because he's intelligent. he would be able to tell you how many weeks Sylvia Brown has done this. So the big festival of skepticism and fun is over at the Stardust the last year before they blow it up. And I'm going to be over there hanging out a lot, and there'll be a lot of groovy, groovy people from, you know, Nadine Strossen from the ACLU mm-hmm. is going to be there.
Sure.
And my friend Karen Russell, who's a great newscaster and gets on all those pundit shows.
A lot of skeptics.
A lot of skeptics.
Is Dawkins coming in?
Dawkins is not going to be at this one. Dawkins will not be here, but everybody will be talking a lot about Dawkins, because that's one of the things we do. Dawkins
is a new show out in England, doesn't
he? Yeah, he does, called The Root of All Evil. And guess what's the root? Money? No. Not to Dawkins.
Not to Dawkins.
Money. Sex? No. Hair care products? No. religion is what it is. And the I think I described the poster for this is the skyline of Manhattan with the Twin Towers and says, imagine a world without religion. And if that doesn't get you chills and make you read some stuff, there's something deeply wrong with you. This is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas with Michael Goudeau. And we're on Free FM. We read Gmails much more than we take calls. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep it free. Very free.